All right, Bang Bang, today is Monday, August 19th, Chicago Dog Walk. Yesterday's Chief. Chief, what up?
What's going on?
Nothing. So, busy week last week. So, we weren't
swamped.
Able to, yes, yeah. Swamped week. We rode on the Miller Lite sailboat. We you know, went to the Barstool Classic, as you guys heard, if you've been following along with the show. But there was something like very conspiracy-ish, slash just interesting, slash just weird that we're like super interested in that.
Slash horrifying.
Slash horrifying. Mostly yeah. Horrifying, yeah. Yes. That we wanted to talk about, obviously, it's Jeffrey Epstein.
Yeah, so it's kind of been going on all summer. So he was, you know, formally charged and arrested again for the second time. So he's like a known pedophile, known creep. But there's an air of mystery and intrigue around him because he's connected to all these powerful people. And it's the names you consistently hear are Trump and Bill Clinton, that they've been seen at his parties and they're linked to him. They've been on his plane, this and that. But it goes way deeper than that. Like, there's so many, like, how is that possible? So it's like, he's like the ultimate what the fuck guy. And obviously it culminated last week when he somehow was on suicide watch and still managed to kill himself in jail. So, which leads even more credence to the conspiracy theories that are already out there percolating. I'm sure it's never going to go away.
Yeah, a lot of suspicions, but we don't want to get there just yet. We want to kind of start at the beginning, kind of tell who this guy was, like how he came to be. So let's kick it off, like from a young age, I guess. What's the story of Jeffrey Epstein?
Yeah, so he's you know, born into New York to like your normal working class kind of family. His parents sounds like it was a whoops because they got married after he was born, but you know, they're just working class people. Dad was a groundskeeper, mom worked in a school and was a homemaker. So typical like 1950s style family, it sounds like. And then you know you fast forward a little bit. And you find out, you know, he's probably a pretty bright guy. He skipped two grades, but he never got a college degree. So he went to this small private school in New York called Cooper Union, which is known for having, like, free tuition. I think they just changed that in the last couple of years. But dropped out of there, then went to NYU to, for their mathematics program and dropped out of there as well. So you always hear about this guy as a billionaire, but he couldn't even get through school.
Yeah, it just doesn't really kind of add up.
Doesn't really add up. Now, there are, you know, self-made billionaires sure. all the time, but typically they're entrepreneurs. This guy's career path is unlike anything I've ever really heard. So he dropped out and then somehow became a teacher at Manhattan Prep. Now, maybe things were different back in the 70s when he got this job, but have you ever had a teacher that was a college dropout?
No, I don't think that's legal, right?
I don't think so either. I think, you know, that's typically, like, there are barriers for entry, and one of them is you have to be, you know, have an education degree, and again, who knows? Maybe that changed, you know, but as far as I was concerned, and, you know, I went to a prep school as well, all those teachers had, like, master's degrees. Most of my public school's teachers were either had a master's degree or were pursuing one, so the fact that he has no college degree, I thought, was a little bit odd. So the fact that he got hired to begin with, another little, like, whoa, that's weird, like, what the fuck, as is the theme of this podcast. He was hired to teach at that school by the father of the current attorney general. So William Barr's dad is the one who initially hired Jeffrey Epstein.
And there's, like, what's the connection there? Then that's what nobody knows. That's what we're kind of trying
who
to
knows?
Find out.
I mean, yeah. But there, we have the current sitting attorney general who would be in charge of, you know, bringing charges against against Jeffrey Epstein now, posthumously, who has a long relationship with him going back to Epstein's, like, first job. So, at least with it through his father. So, who knows if there's, like, a real connection there or not, but it is just, like, weird, okay? Then he somehow parlays that job into getting hired as a trader for Bear Stearns. So, Bear Stearns, you know, they got a lot of notoriety, I would say, during the last economic downturn in 2008, the Great Recession. But at that school, he taught the chairman of Bear Stearns, that guy's son. His name is Alan Greenberg, not Greenspan, Greenberg, but still, like, one of the most powerful bankers in the United States who's running Bear Stearns. Tabs somehow takes this college dropout math teacher, scoops him up, and hires him for Bear Stearns, and then he was somehow a rocket ship inside of Bear Stearns. He went from being like a normal trading partner to a partner in 4 years. So he got hired in 76, and by 80, he's a partner at Bear Stearns. Like, that seems like it should be almost unheard of. but made it happen somehow.
Pretty quick trajectory. That's like, you know, someone just completely jumping their prospect timing, right?
Something
like
that. Yeah. So it'd be like, oh, he started in single A and whoosh, he's in the minors, you know, for the playoff stretch.
That's like, a freshman playing in on varsity when it's like, this team doesn't play freshmen.
Exactly. He was a shooting star, though, because as soon as he was there, he was out. By 1981, he was out. And there's rumors that he got in trouble. They don't say for what. But in 1981, he was out on his own, starting his own company.
Okay, but now all of a sudden, after that, is that where he made all his money? Where does the money come from?
Nobody knows. Like, nobody can trace it. No one knows how much he has. The only known investor he has is this guy, Les Wexner, who is kind of a retail mogul, most famously connected to Victoria's Secret. So Wexner is a billionaire. So there's, you know, the thought was that he initially bankrolled Epstein when he got started, which maybe Epstein had some of his own money, but he was running this fund and he had like very specific requirements to be able to get into his fund. Okay, you had to give him power of attorney, which is almost unheard of. That you basically power of attorney means Epstein can sign and do anything with your money once it's in the fund without any legal ramifications. Doesn't need your signature on anything. He can just trade and do money as he pleases with anything in your estate. Because he has power of attorney.
And this Victoria's Secret guy allowed that to happen?
Allowed it to happen. And again, no one knows who else is in that fund because it's very secretive. It's like kept offshore. No one really knows. But that was like supposedly a requirement that he needed that. And then he also needed you to have a $1 billion basement investment. So like if you have, you're like, hey, Epstein, I got this. I won the lottery. I got $750 million or I'm worth, you know, $1.2 billion, and I want to give you $800 million of it to invest, you'd be like, nah, fuck yourself.
You needed $1 billion.
You need to put in $1 billion.
Wow.
So he's not like, it's, again, strange. So there's like questions about that. Like, what the fuck, you need $1 billion to get in this fund, and no one knows who's in it, who's ever given the money. It could just be, maybe it's just the one guy. Maybe it's a Ponzi scheme. Nobody really knows. But yeah, getting back to that power of attorney thing, because no one really knows what Epstein's worth, no one's been able to figure it out. They can only like look at his assets, and he's got a ton of assets. He's got, you know, all kinds of fancy cars, the properties. He's got a house in Paris, a house in Manhattan, the famous one that he got in trouble at in 05 in Florida, and then he's got his own private island in the Caribbean. But it's like, how did he even get those things? The mansion in New York is valued at $77 million. Do you know how he got it?
How?
So it was Epstein who purchased it through Wexner's fund, through his money, because he had power of attorney. He then transferred it to himself. So it was a $77 million mansion in New York, transferred to Epstein's company for $0. And Wexner's signature appears nowhere on any of the documentation. It's just, hey, I'm Epstein, and I'm signing this over to Epstein, and I can do that through the power of attorney. Now I have this mansion.
I mean, what a deal for him.
Must be nice. Good way to get a million-dollar house, $77 million house if you can do it. But it's just like, so that is like, what the fuck? Like, so, Wexner, what are you doing? Why are you essentially letting this guy like take a $77 million home?
Yeah, like that's like, you know, people, $77 million home, you don't do that for your family. Like, you get them like a nice house, but not $77 million.
I don't care how much money you have. Holy $77 million is like one of the most valuable pieces of property in all of New York City.
That's insane.
Yeah, and he just signed it over to himself from himself.
Has there been any discussion about who's in on the bank account? Are they investing in this bank account now?
They're investigating the bank account now because there's been a lot of these former victims are going after Epstein and his estate. And that was one of the things. We can get into the 05 court case, too. So, but they're going after the assets now because now he won't have his day in court because he killed himself. So there are some of the victims are suing against the estate. But the estate is shrouded in mystery, too, because like I said, like no one really knows where the money is, how much there is. The only thing that they can really value are the assets that he has on paper, meaning like those properties that he owns between the island and Paris and Manhattan and Florida, and then anything in there, meaning the cars, the jet, things like that. So there's been articles written like before he was arrested this last time. It was just like a random article in 2010. Now, obviously, he had already been in trouble, but it was like Forbes wrote an article saying Jeffrey Epstein is not a billionaire. So it's like there's always been like what's going on with this guy?
A little bit of mystery.
Yeah, but on the financial aspect as well.
Yeah. So before we get into the 2005 case, let's talk about something you saw on Instagram.
Oh boy! I mean, quick turn.
Nice turn.
Nice turn. We got to have some good stuff here.
Yes, exactly.
And there's nothing better than JP Grazianos.
Nothing, JP Grazianos. So what did you see on Instagram that you really enjoyed?
I'm going to get it this week. That's how good it looked. Like I started salivating instantly. It was a burrata salad with like this beautiful thick cut bacon on a nice bread. Like that's the type of thing. Like we were talking to Jim at Graziano's. He's like a genius for sandwiches. He just knows like what to put together, like a little burrata, a little tomato. Yeah, are we gonna get regular bacon? No, we're getting the thick cut and we're gonna make it that much better. And he just knows, like the guy is an artist.
Yeah, low key and a great like Instagram photo taker. Like yeah. he knows how to get his product out there. So yeah.
No filters though. Yeah, no filters. All natural. He like you don't need filters for those sandwiches.
All natural. So yeah, go check him out. 901 West Randolph or go to jpgraziano.com. Order some stuff. If you enter the code DOGWALK, you get 10% off on pickup or deliveries. And when you go there, say Eddie sent you, you'll get an extra punch in your sub card so you get that free sub sooner. jpgraziano.com, 901 West Randolph. Go check him out. Okay, so now let's get into the 2005 case.
Okay, so this is the part where it goes from being like, what the fuck, that's weird, to what the fuck, this is like actually disturbing.
Yeah.
So the 2005 case, you have an underage girl, supposedly as young as 14, goes to the police in Palm Beach, Florida, with her parents and to file charges against Jeffrey Epstein. And rather than just going in and arresting him, the police are like, oh, wow. And they decide to build a case. So they find the first girl, they find the second girl, they find like numerous girls in the area who testify, give statements, and they're building a case against Epstein. And they start to, the police in South Florida start to realize like the sprawl of this thing, and they get scared because this guy is, you know, supposedly worth $1 billion. He's a big name in the community. He's linked to, you know, all these powerful people. We better get the FBI involved because we don't want him to get off on, you know, lower charges because he just kind of, you know, runs roughshod over local police, the local, you know, the attorney general in the area in Florida. Like, we better get it federal charges. So that's what they do. They turn it over to the FBI. The exact thing that they didn't want to happen happened. So they were like, we need to make this federal charges, sex trafficking. Like, this thing is huge and horrible. What he ends up getting charged with was solicitation. So basically, like if like the Bob Kraft thing, like he goes into a rub and tug, and yeah, like you're soliciting a prostitute. Like you're not involved in like the recruiting, the assault. There's no charges about the girls being underage. There, it was just like, hey, like we did a sting on a rub and tug, and Epstein was there. Like very similar charges that would be brought to. Like brought against like Robert Kraft or people who just got like, you know, they happened to be in the massage parlor when that happened, as opposed to the guy who was like actively like, you know, forcing girls. There was one allegation of rape back then.
So, I mean, two very, very different crimes that were, yes, fell under the same hat.
Right. And they were just, you know, and it went from, and so like the people, the police who were originally like working the case were like, you got to be kidding me. Like, how does this, like, we brought this. We did it this specific way and got the feds involved so this wouldn't happen, and then that happened. So it's horrible and horrifying. And it's like, in order for that, the part that really bothered me the most, the initial girl who brought the charges was allegedly 14 at the time. So in order for it to be solicitation, you have to call that girl a prostitute. Like, how can a 14-year-old, it's statute rape no matter what, but they like ignored all that and just made him register as a sex offender, and then he got the lightest sentencing maybe of all time.
And not even to say, like, there was multiple girls. Like, this wasn't just one.
Oh, it was a major, like, they knew. Yeah. They had many victims on record, but it was just, like, in order, like, I don't know how you can be like, yeah, the minor girl, the 14-year-old, like, she's a prostitute. Yeah. Like, the original victim who, like, brought the charges.
So,
like,
the lightest sentencing, what do you mean by, like, he obviously got the solicitation, but what was his, like?
So, it was 18 months. He got out early. But even when he was in there, he was allowed to be out on a, quote-unquote, work release program. So, he could be out of jail during the day for 12 hours a day. So, basically, he got to, like, sleep in jail. And what? It sounds like that scene from Goodfellas, where they're like, yeah, we're in jail, but they have like steaks and TVs and they're cooking garlic. And it's like, yeah, it's just like they're spend some time away from their wives. Like, it's just like it sounds like it was a very, very light sentencing. Or it doesn't sound like it. It was. And he had access to like this attorney's room. His cell was left unlocked. So like even in the middle of the night, he can get up and go out and watch TV. Like he was on Easy Street. He was supposed to be in a particular type of prison. And he was kept in like this other private holding cell over by, over like away from like a normal state penitentiary.
And what's interesting too is I don't think Kraft is going to go to jail for solicitation. So it's almost like they threw this at him, like knowing like, hey, like this is a different kind of solicitation. You got lucky. So it's almost like, I don't know, in a weird way, he got more than what a normal solicitation person would get, right?
Yes and no. So if you get charged with this, typically, you're not allowed, because you have to, if you have a sex offender crime, you're not allowed out on work release. That's like typically the, you know, like if you have other, like a DUI or like some of these other crimes where you have to go to jail, you can get a work release. In Florida, like the sheriff's department had a specific law being like, if you get convicted as a sex offender, which he did, you're not allowed to have a work release. So he's a sex offender. He had to register as such. That was the rule. And he still was able to, like, have all these special provisions attached to his sentence where it just was like he can do whatever he wanted.
Wow. So we're going to come back to this at some point. I think we're going to leave off there. Is that right?
Yep.
So, yeah. So we'll leave off there, everybody. But that's just kind of the background. That's kind of the history. And the more we go, the more we'll get into kind of the weeds and, like, who he knows and kind of what happened, what people think happened in the jail cell and everything like that. So that's it for today, everybody. We will catch you tomorrow.